Let's get to our guest, Dan Feinman, co-head of APAC Equity Strategy at Credit Suisse. So I know, Dan, your focus is on Asia, but let's talk briefly about the U.S. economy, because obviously a lot of countries in Asia depended on exporting to the United States. So we had all this good data. And is it possible that the bond market is wrong here of recession being inevitable, or does it just mean it gets pushed further out and that, you know, eventually growth will weaken?
I think recession is highly likely. We have to recall that what's driving this recession is the Fed. The Fed wants to slow the economy so that it can bring inflation down. If the economy remains more robust, that means that the Fed has more work ahead of it, but it doesn't mean that the Fed no longer has a job to do. The key issue is really inflation. What we need is for inflation to come down, and until that happens, really, we're still at risk.
Well, Dan, if inflation stays stubbornly high, and of course that's the fear among Fed watchers, market watchers tend to focus more on, oh, they can't stay high that long. Seasoned Fed watchers say they have to because the past has told them they can't stop too early. Let's say it doesn't stop too early. What does it mean for investors?
Well, it's clearly a negative. Markets are now pricing in rate cuts in the second half of the year, the pivot that markets have been excited about. If that doesn't happen, which I think is quite possible, then markets are going to be disappointed.
I just saw a story in the Securities Daily in China saying that, and they cite five economists as saying that China's GDP will expand by more than 5% next year. Is that priced into markets?
I don't think that markets are too obsessed with the numbers for the GDP. They're looking more at, I think, more high frequency data. They're looking at earnings, and they're looking forward as far as what sort of approaches the government takes to regulatory issues and the tech sector. I don't think that the official GDP targets are critical numbers for the markets.
So what do you think, many people have gotten a lot more positive on China, with very good reason, obviously. The reopening, boom, what a pivot, right? And the support for the property market, it's a pillar of the economy now, right? When it used to be a bit of a pariah, it almost seemed, for the government. How positive are all these kinds of things for investors?
They're quite positive, given the valuation backdrop. If China weren't so cheap, you might not get so excited that it is now finally joining the rest of the world and reopening its economy in the face of the virus. What makes China special now is that it's still very cheap. Even after the rally we had the past month, Chinese multiples are still very low relative to their own history, relative to multiples elsewhere.
If these economists in the Securities Daily are correct and we do see GDP expand, never mind if we're not tracking actually the GDP numbers, but if we see domestic demand strong and consumers really getting out there, they've been stunted of late because of COVID and lockdowns. If they do get out there, does that interest you, and what? How would you play that then?
Well, I think there definitely is a good story for China. We've already seen earnings sort of bottom out and start to establish some positive momentum even before the reopening is really implemented. If we do see an improvement in the property market situation, that would help confidence more broadly speaking. What we'd really like to see would be additional stimulus for the broad-based economy. Possibly a more aggressive GDP target could indicate that could be coming. If we had that, then you've got the grounds for a fairly sustainable rally in China.
Let's look at Japan. Bank of Japan seems to me like it's the hot central bank now, right, for 2023, certainly the first half of the year. We know the Fed's kind of on this, we're going to watch every, you know, speech and every meeting to see how much they do or don't move. But Japan's been, you know, with this shock, widen the band on the yield curve control. Looks like they're starting their normalization. How quickly? So many things. What do you make of where they are now and how this will or will not impact the path for investors?
Well, it's not entirely clear what the BOJ's game plan is. Is it, as they've said, a technical fix for problems in the bond market, unkink the kinks in the yield curve, or is this the start of a monetary policy tightening to bring them more in line with what global central banks have been doing? Quite frankly, I think that is still an open question. And given that we've got a new governor coming in April, that means that the uncertainty is especially high. Obviously, this is of great importance for both fixed income markets in Japan and for equities. That's not surprising that we've seen the volatility over the past week that we have.
Can we make this argument that at some point ahead, we see a little bit of a more normalizing process happening, and that slowly but surely, big institutional investors will have to transfer their bond holdings because as yields rise, the value of the bonds are going down into equities. And so we could be coming into a period where Japanese equities benefit.
That's a possible tailwind for the equities market, but there are also possible headwinds. If you do get tighter monetary policy in Japan, that could place upward pressure on the yen, allow the yen to appreciate. Typically, Japanese stocks like a weak yen and a strong dollar, not vice versa. That would be a headwind.
However, a stronger yen and a more appealing equity market may bring money back to Japan, and that could be, you know, that could be beneficial, I suppose.
Agreed. It could. There could, quite oddly enough, be some benefits on the liquidity front. Usually, monetary policy is not something that's good for domestic liquidity, but if this meant that locals were bringing repatriating funds that they'd put overseas to take advantage of higher yields, and then that could maybe help the domestic liquidity situation.
So Dan, let's get a couple questions in on ASEAN. Where in ASEAN? It's a pretty big area, right? Which countries or which country do you like best in terms of a good place to invest in 2023?
Well, most of the past year and a half, the clear star has been Indonesia, and for good reason. It's the number one commodities exporter in Asia, and it's benefited from this boom in commodity pricing. It's also had a nice bounce back from the pandemic, and there's a good long-term story about industrialization and vertically integrating its commodities industry. But I think at the moment, maybe for the next several months, Thailand could be a more interesting story. It's got arguably the best economic turnaround in Asia and one of the best globally on the tourism recovery. Asian tourism is normalizing with a long lag as compared with what we've seen in Europe and the US. It's got a lot of headroom to grow over the next year. Okay. Thailand is the premier place to play.
All right, but quickly then, you've given me a couple of countries. Is there any particular industry or kind of company that you like? You've got about 20 seconds.
Well, regionally, we still like banks, and ASEAN is very much a banks-oriented region. There's a good story for banks as far as falling credit costs, improving loan growth, improving margins.
All right, Dan, thanks very much for taking the time out to be with us. Dan Feinman, co-head of Asia-Pacific Equity Strategy at Credit Suisse.